Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. My name is TJ Jackson. I have with me the wonderful Henry Hebert.
Hello.
And I have my eldest brother, Taj Jackson, who looks like he's going to make a prank or something. He's doing something.
Yeah, why don't I get the wonderful?
The amazing Taj Jackson. Man.
And then we are missing Tara, who's away for business on a trip. But we love our bro, so he'll be here with us in spirit.
Yes, and we are live, so if you're listening to us right now, thank you so much for joining us. This is show number 2.
Yes, yes, yes.
And later on, we will be opening up to take a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a question about our topic, which is loss and grief, and you want to ask us a question, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation.
Sweet. And for those of you who are new to us, we co-founded the Dede Jackson Foundation while we are filming the docuseries, The Jacksons Next Generation, which was on Lifetime.
Yeah. Now, TJ, what else do we have to let them know?
Okay. Thanks for the reminder, Taj.
You're welcome.
We are not licensed therapists. We're just people who've experienced death and loss and are still finding our way through life dealing with that. So if you feel the need to find licensed help, please do not just go by what we're saying. Go find licensed help.
Yeah. And last week, we shared our personal stories of how Taj, Terrell, and TJ were impacted by the death of their mother from over 20 years ago. Hmm. And I shared a bit about how I was affected by the death of my best friend from college, who died 5 years ago. And even though it's been 20 years and 5 years, we all, you know, still have moments of really struggling through our own grief. Hmm. And it's definitely really hard to share our stories, but we're back this week to talk about this some more. And this topic really is just that important. And this week, we're actually going to start with sharing some comments and answering questions that we weren't able to get to via Twitter last week. So, Taj, what do we have?
Ooh, we got some good questions. Or good comments, I should say.
Both.
From these names are so long, too.
You can do it.
From Edwina R7080616161. Mm-hmm. It's like a phone number. My dad passed away June 27th, 8 years ago. This year was hard due to 2 tragic deaths. Mm. Mm. So that's what her comment. And we definitely do want to send support and condolences to her. You know, it is hard, you know.
Much love to you, Edwina. And just stay strong for your family and friends. And we're there with you.
And we're sending you lots of love and light and prayers.
Okay, here's from, this is at LMCOO. I don't know these names, so... lost my dad when I was 23. Still hurts today. Best medicine is to talk about my memories.
Mm. I would agree with that. What about you guys?
I think it depends on the person. I think some people, I think most people should agree with that. I think for most people, talking it out and talking, I'm sure it's probably, I assume it's scientifically proven that you got to get it out. I think some people like to talk about it. Some people like to box. Some people like to do physical activity. Some people, I think it depends. But I think you got to find what it is for you.
I definitely think that having just fun and mm-hmm. just remembering the good times, mm. the good memories, I mean, that for me helps me. So, yeah, memories always help.
Yeah.
Okay, we have at Dimple Girl at Dimple Girl 74. Mm-hmm. Gosh, this is harder than it looks. Have the three of you gone through the process of forgiving the person who took your mother's life? Not for him, but for you.
Yeah, that's a tough one, too. Ever since I was a baby, I've always been taught the importance of forgiving and the ability to, how important the ability to forgive is. So it's something that I really, really try to do. And it's tough. I think I'm almost there for the guy who, you know, but I'll never forget, that's for sure. But I know part of forgiving helps yourself. It's just, I don't know.
How did it feel when you saw him this year?
It's tough. I go in there at the parole hearings wanting to forgive, with the intention of forgiving, but then, you know, certain things he may say or do, or the way he may act, or the way he may kind of laugh off something, can just rub you wrong to the point where you have no, you know, not so much care for him.
Yeah. We were brought up, as TJ said, to forgive. But there does have to be some remorse, and the fact that we're not seeing that remorse from him makes it hard for us to, like, just truly forgive him until we feel that he, you know, takes responsibility for what he did.
Well, people around the world really are suffering from hardship of great loss and grief, just like all of us. And according to the National Mental Health Association, just in the U.S. alone, 8 million people suffered through the death of someone in their immediate family last year, 800,000 new widows and widowers, and this was just in the U.S. From the Omega Journal of Death and Dying, they report that 1 in 5 kids will experience the death of someone close to them by the age of 18, which means, TJ, you were 16 years old when your mom passed away. So, I mean, you fit in that statistic. We're literally putting a face to that stat right now, which makes it so real.
Yeah.
And as adults, you know, we have difficulty moving through loss and grief. Now, just imagine what it's like for a child.
It's tough. It stinks. There's no other way to say it. It hurts. It stinks. And loss and grief is a difficult topic for all of us to talk about. And many of us don't even like saying the word death, you know, or dying, but it's a reality.
We say passed away.
Yeah.
You don't want to say the word death.
Yeah.
Or dead.
Yeah. And you know, but
or
the truth
loss,
is,
too.
It's a reality. You know, right now someone's losing a parent or a child, and they have to go through this, and they have to go through life with this pain. And that's why for us it was important to start the foundation, you know, because we wanted to create a community and the resources to help as many people as possible. So that's why we're doing this radio show podcast, so that we could share everyone's inspiring stories and to help each other get through that difficult, you know, process. So today we're going to share another story of someone who's lost someone very dear to them, and that's our beloved Henry. Henry, you want to tell us about your best friend in college, and you know how he passed, and give us a little backdrop on his story.
Sure. On April 6, 2011, my best college friend Jeremy died after courageous 2.5 year battle with brain cancer. I met Jeremy at UMass Amherst during my freshman year in 1989, so we were friends for over 22 years. You know, we had that instant brother-sister relationship. He was my all-around friend that I could go study with, go eat with, go party with. He was a great wing guy. he was that guy that I would go out to parties with, and I could always count on that he'd be there to make sure I got home okay. And then every Saturday and Sunday for, you know, almost, you know, 3 or 4 years, we had brunch every Saturday, Sunday with our larger friend group at the Dining Commons, kind of going over, you know, the night before and laughing about things that we did. And, you know, it was amazing. He really was a big part of my college experience, and we were both majoring in communication, so we often had the same classes. And, you know, next to family, Jeremy was that someone that I just spent a lot of time with, and he just knew me so well, and he was that keeper of just so many of my stories, and I definitely can't believe that he's not here today.
Do you have any really like strong college memories? Like, what's your number one college memory that you'd want to share?
Well, there's some that I can't share. That is not appropriate.
Easy.
It was college. I think that when I think about Jeremy, and I knew that he was a lifelong friend, I think of that moment when we were taking public speaking class, and I was so, so afraid. I was terrified of public speaking, and still right now I'm nervous, and I can't believe I'm doing this. But anyway, I was taking public speaking, and during my first speech, I was up there, and I looked out into the audience, and I saw Jeremy smiling at me, and three sentences in, and I just froze, and my heart started beating fast, and I ran out of the classroom. I couldn't do it. I was, like,
really?
Hyperventilating. Yes.
I can't even picture that. First of all, you sound amazing on
Thank
this
you.
Radio show. You really do, and I can't believe you're nervous at all. Because you're awesome.
It's a huge fear.
You're awesome.
And that's why I think this topic is so important. That's why I'm doing it with y'all. But yeah, Jeremy ran after me, and I wanted to quit that class. And you know, at that point, I had a pretty good GPA. And Jeremy was like, you can't. You have to keep going. You can do this. And he really was my cheerleader. And so I got through the class, and I ended up making it through. And I knew from that point on that, you know, that Jeremy was a lifelong friend, because it wasn't just about the good times and the parties. He was there supporting me through, like, you know, something that was so scary to me, and he held my hand during it.
How did you find out that Jeremy had cancer?
In 2008, I was on the committee for Santa Monica's Relay for Life, which is it's a 24-hour overnight community fundraising walk for American Cancer Society. And so, ironically, I was actually raising money for cancer, and I was doing this in honor of my Aunt Fran, who has been a longtime survivor of cancer. And I love my aunt dearly, so I really wanted to do something in her name to fight cancer, and that was my way. So I was on the phone with a fellow committee member talking about the event, which was happening the next day, when I got a call on the other line, and I see Jeremy's name come up. And so I clicked over, feeling really happy and excited to talk to him, because I knew that he was going to be proud that I was doing something to give back to the community. And, you know, I just remember smiling and just sharing with him. And, you know, but then I noticed that he wasn't, he was really quiet. And then he said, I'm really, you know, I'm glad, Hen. And his tone was really flat, and my heart kind of dropped when I thought, uh-oh, something's going on. I just felt sick to my stomach. And then he said to me that he just found out that he had brain cancer, and the doctor gave him 2.5 years to live. That was a hard moment.
I can only imagine. So how did you react? Like, what did you...
In retrospect now, I realize I went into major denial mode, and I went into positive, happy Henry mode, where we can get through this together. I was in the midst of raising money for American Cancer Society, so I had met a lot of survivors, and so I felt like Jeremy was going to get a miracle as well. You know, I just thought that, you know, he was going to beat cancer. And so that first year, this is hard. Mm-hmm. That first year, you know, Jeremy was dying, but I just thought that he was going to have a chance to live. Mm-hmm. And so I just didn't even think the possibility that death was coming.
I think you mentioned something that everyone, or mostly everyone, goes through is that kind of denial. There's a denial phase that hits that I think Terrell mentioned it last week, but something that I definitely went through as well was where you kind of don't believe it's true. Maybe it was something in the prep meeting we talked about, but you kind of don't believe that it's reality. And you kind of think if you just sleep, or after a couple of days or a week, something will happen. I used to remember thinking my mom will be coming home at one point. You know, I'll see her again.
It doesn't seem real.
It doesn't seem real. And that it takes time to, I guess, come to terms. It took me many years to finally realize it was definite. So I understand that pain of kind of just, it's kind of a self-denial phase. That you have to overcome and get through. How long did it take you to kind of come to terms? Because your situation is a little different, because Jeremy was still alive. And you said you kind of denied, you were in a little bit of a denial. How long did it take you to actually come to terms with he really was living his last days?
it definitely took me over a year. Jeremy and I talked almost every morning. He was in Massachusetts and I was in California. And so while I got ready for work, because of the time difference, we would chat either via text or on the phone. And one day, you know, Jeremy called me and he just had that tone in his voice again from when he told me his diagnosis. And I was like, oh God, what's going on? And he just said, Hen, it's time. I need you to come home. And my immediate response was, no, I can't. And he said, I need you to. And I said, I can't right now because I have the flu, Jeremy, and I'm really sick, so I can't get on a plane. I'm just too sick. And then I realized, as I was saying it, what I was saying, and I just started laughing, and I was like, I can't believe that I just told a guy who's dying of cancer that I am really too sick to fly. And, you know, and there it was. The elephant was out in the room. And then Jeremy just started laughing. And he had that, like, good laugh, the one that comes from your heart, where he's just so joyful. And he's like, thank you for being, you know, this honest with me. I need this. This is the kind of talk I need, Hen. And he said, but I need you also to come on a plane and come home so I can see you one last time. And, you know, and I didn't know at that point, though. Jeremy hadn't been out of the house in months and months, and he was that sick, and it was too painful. But he really just wanted one last brunch with all of his college friends, because that's what we used to do. And he wanted something, like, normal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got all of our college friends together, and, you know, we all flew home, and we went out to brunch one last time. And I remember every moment of, like, that last time. And I'm just, like, I'm so glad that I went and I overcame that fear of, like, saying goodbye to him in person. But it was 2.5 years, really, of my denial until that moment of when he called to say it was time.
When you went to the brunch, there were other friends with you?
There was. Okay. It was our college friends.
Did you guys act any different? Or did you try to... like, what was your mindset? Were you trying to not... were you watching what you were saying or watching how you were looking at him or anything like that?
It was hard to see him at... it was hard to see him at first because of how sick he was and the medication he had been taking. His face and his body was really bloated, and he walked really slow, and you could tell he was in pain. You know, but we all tried to really just stay focused on making him laugh and not show him that, you know, that we felt... you know, like, you want to help him, but he wanted to do it on his own, and he was so determined, let me do it on my own so I can just have a normal day like we were in college,
yeah,
that we just kind of gave him the space to do it. But then afterwards, my college friend Tom and I, you know, went out in Boston, and we were just in tears because we knew that it was one of the last times we were going to see him.
Yeah, that's tough. And Taj, what's your opinion on that? When, like, for anyone out there who has a family member that's really, you know, in their last days, or how do you act when you see them? Your opinion. I mean, your opinion. Do you want to act like nothing is going on? Do you want to kind of say, because I always wonder that when I go to visit people in the hospital, am I supposed to be, you know, if you need anything, you know, let me know, I'm here for you? Or am I supposed to just be fun times? Is it supposed to just, the goal just to make them laugh?
I mean, just my opinion, I feel that you would want to relive memories and have fun, mm-hmm, as opposed to, you know, make it dire or something like, mm-hmm, that. So for me, if that was the situation I was put in, I would definitely try and be upbeat and, mm-hmm, stuff like that. I know it's, you know, it's very hard on that person as well. So
I think that's good, Taj, because I think just the fact that you are there, they know you're there to support and help anyway. So I think that's the right advice, is just to try to lift up spirits.
And I would recommend, I think there's certain people, I know there's probably people now listening today that are at that crossroads of, should I go or not? You know, it might be too hard for me to go. And I would 100% recommend going, because
definitely go.
The guilt, mm-hmm, of not going is unbearable. From what I've heard, you know, with that I should have went feeling, mm-hmm, you don't want that feeling. So, you know, you should go, and
That was one of my best decisions, is that I got on, I was able to have enough courage to get onto that plane to go say goodbye to him face to face.
Exactly. Because, I mean, if we had that chance, we would have taken it.
Absolutely.
It's scary, though. It's really scary knowing that you're about to go say goodbye to someone and never see them again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... I haven't dealt with that. At that phase, you know, that kind of way, and that's just seems terrifying as well. Okay, Henry, question, tough question. When Jeremy did pass, I think I know this answer, but can you tell us how you felt and where you were at emotionally, mentally, all types of ways?
Well, Jeremy called me the day before he died to do a final talk of what was on his mind, and he, you know, he actually really started to prepare me, but I don't know if you ever can really be prepared either way. And so the day that, when I found out he died, it was really hard. I was unprepared for the emotional roller coaster of just the feelings of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is such a complex just emotion, and I would just burst into tears just at a coffee shop for no reason.
Mm.
And I just was even though Jeremy tried to prepare me as best he could and said goodbye, I had no experience of it, and because we're not taught, we're really not taught in school about grief and loss and how to move through really hard negative feelings, that I didn't have real coping tools in order to kind of move through it.
And you told me once that you would, I think you said you texted him. Almost on a daily basis, and then even after he passed. You want to share that a bit?
I did, yeah. That was because we talked almost every day for over 20 years. I mean, when he died, it just seemed not real.
Mm-hmm.
And because we lived apart for so many years, I was in California, he was in Massachusetts, we'd always connect via text or phone. And so I went to go text him. I'd just gotten hired on to first season of The X Factor, and I was really excited to share with him because he loves music, and I knew that he would get a kick out of it. I was working with Simon Cowell, and I knew, you know, and so I was writing the text like, oh my God, you're not going to believe this. I'm about to work on The X Factor, Simon Cowell, and I was about to hit send, and then I remembered he's not going to be on the other end to receive it. And then I just burst into tears all over again.
But you never did actually send text after he had passed.
No, I almost.
You
I
just
almost
were in the habit.
I was
of
in the
doing
habit
it.
Of doing it, or calling him. I was in the habit of calling him. Mm. He would often be like the first person that I would want to, you know, tell either good news or if something was really hard going on in my life that I needed somebody to workshop with or support me through it. I would often call him, and it just, you know, it just devastated me all over again that he wasn't there for me to talk to, and it just was a reminder. And so I actually ended up on X Factor. He had just been passed away for, I think, a month when I got X Factor, and I ended up working for a year straight and just working 80 hours, 90 hours a week, 7 days a week, and just I went numb because the feelings of grief, it was hard, it was difficult, and it hurt, it was painful, it was sad. And it wasn't just sad, it was like extreme sadness, it was extreme hurt. And so I ended up just numbing myself and shutting myself down for a complete year where I just worked, and then after a year I ended up having a month off where I started processing the grief and realizing that I wasn't equipped to handle you know, a complex feeling like grief, and I needed help. So I started going into therapy, and I started taking mindful meditation classes to really understand these waves of feelings and these emotions, so that way I could find healing within myself, so I could then move forward.
Yeah. Grief is serious. It's serious, and it's the numbing phase or the numbing feeling you went through is real as well. And how long would you say it took for you to kind of, I know you said you worked for a year straight, but how long would you say it took? Let me ask you this real quick. Was that your first, I should say, I don't want to say real loss, but your first impactful loss of a person was Jeremy?
It was, I lost my grandparents when I was young.
Did that help you in?
Because they had lived a full life and they lived in their late 80s, early 90s. It was really different. Mm-hmm. Jeremy was my age. He was my peer. And I really, in some sense, I think I took for granted that he would always be around. And so, you know, even during our last conversation, he, you know, when he was saying goodbye to me, he regretted that for the last 2.5 years, when he had the diagnosis of cancer, that he wasn't really living, that he didn't like that he was going to work trying to act normal as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why didn't I really just live? Why didn't I just live more in the moment? Why was I trying to pretend? And so, you know, after he passed away in that year that I went numb, I realized that in some sense I had been also pretending with him for 2.5 years, and that going numb, I was then kind of doing a similar pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recognize that, okay, like I'm caught in this loop and I need to kind of find my way through it. But it wasn't until I really met y'all just last year, which is what? Now it's been like...
You say y'all like a Southern. You're not
I do,
even from
but
the
I'm not
South,
even Southern.
Right?
No. But it wasn't until I met you guys that
throws
really...
me off every
time. Sounds better than you guys.
Like, wear your boots.
I have boots on. I'll take a picture later. But when I met y'all and I realized that that you were... like that we talked about being stuck in grief, that from there, I was like, wow, I'm still stuck in my own grief, and
yeah,
that I need something even more, which is why doing this foundation is that much more important to me, because if I'm stuck and all of you are also processing grief still, then there must be more people out there that are like us.
Henry, thank you for sharing your story. And you know we're here with you.
Yes.
You're not alone.
Thank you.
And one thing I do want to bring up is my father lost a couple of his... Well, my father's lost a lot of close
yeah.
friends, but he lost his best friend of many years this year, Mr. Ed Tate. And
I remember that.
I remember... I think it may have been last year, actually.
It was during...
It was within 12 months.
During the show.
We were in Vegas.
Yeah.
But the one thing that, you know, repeatedly I hear from people who are passing is... keep in focus what's important in life, and that's family and your time. And I just want to make a reminder to everyone listening, it's not about the material stuff. It's not about, you know, you got to take care of yourself and do what's important for your loved ones and be there for them.
And be present. Be present in the moment and really, really hear and listen. Because when...
Life is precious and it goes fast, so...
And I wish I... Now I wish I had really listened when Jeremy said the 2.5 years, because I think I would have tried to see him more and tried to do just more adventures and just really lived more mm-hmm. while he was here, instead of trying to act and pretend that he was going to have a miracle for tomorrow. So I think I was living for tomorrow instead of today. And I think the greatest gift through Jeremy's passing has been for me is that I'm actually more present for my family and friends and even others now,
yeah.
where I really try and listen and hear what they're saying. And if I hear somebody saying that the doctor said 2.5 years, then I'm like, okay, what are we going to do then for today? And I'm not trying to then pretend and live for tomorrow.
That's beautiful. That's right. That's the right way to go. You're listening to the Power of Love radio show. This is brought to you by D.D. Jackson Foundation. And I just want to talk a bit about what the foundation is meant to be. And it's basically meant to be, we're trying to build a community where people can talk and people can get help and be inspired and to kind of get, for lack of a better term, just help and how to get past and how to get through the grieving process. But to do that, we need your, you know, cooperation, for another lack of a great term. We need your help, you know. So if you have your own personal stories of loss or grief, or if you have any coping mechanisms or skills that have really helped, please share it with us. We have our website at ddjf.org. There's a Twitter, Facebook, and the Twitter, Taj, I know I'm kind of throwing you around, but
DDJ Foundation.
So the letters DDJ Foundation,
yes,
is our Twitter handle. And please feel free to share anything you want, anything you think can be of help to the community.
Yeah. And I think, too, how you're putting your own grief in action. Because I think for us, you know, by co-founding the D.G. Jackson Foundation, we are creating this community to talk about grief and loss. And this is kind of how our way of putting grief into action. And another thing that we are doing is creating music therapy programs for kids. And one thing I realized is through Jeremy's passing is that, you know, he left behind his wife and, you know, three children. His kids were 8, 5, and 3 at the time. And again, we started the show with statistics, and, you know, there were 800,000 new widows and widowers last year, and his wife fits into that category, and, you know, 1 in 5 kids, and he left behind 3 kids. So, you know, even I know it was really hard for Jeremy to leave his family, and so for me, like, I wanted to do something in Jeremy's name for a long, long time, and so my personal why I'm really doing this is, you know, in honor of Jeremy. And Jeremy really loved music, so being part of this organization and creating a music therapy program to help kids through grief and loss, like, that's really my way of continuing Jeremy's legacy. So, you know, and I know...
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, that after we started the D.D. Jackson Foundation, we decided that our first program would focus on music therapy to help school-age children.
And our programs are... Music Heals, Rhythm Hope for ages 7 to 12, and My Story, Our Song for teens. And our music therapy classes actually use music and group counseling to provide children who have lost a parent or even loss of health or gone through some kind of trauma that they're experiencing grief. And it's an opportunity for the children to emotionally express their feelings through designed music activities that encourages personal growth. In over 6 to 8 weeks, children and program staff, including a board-certified music therapist, work collaboratively to compose and record original songs as a tool to help cope with grief and loss. This creative process actually allows the children a safe place to express their stories of loss and to find hope. Equally important, it just shows the kids that they're not alone in their grief.
And I would like to say, we finished our first program, what was it, 2 weeks ago?
Maybe yes,
3 weeks
we
ago we finished it. And it was amazing, because as the weeks went on, you could tell the impact you're having on these kids. You know, by week one, they were learning names, but... You know, by week 3 and 4, they were giving hugs and excited to go, and just see the light in their eye and the excitement, you know, to start the program and to have fun through music, and just really, I think, just being in a group of just letting them know they're not alone did so much for them. So I was just very pleased with it and excited to see how the program is going to continue to grow.
I loved seeing when the children started becoming more open and sharing about their stories. But what I really loved is at the end how they were so inspired to find more hope, and the heaviness of their own loss was starting to be lifted, and you could see how music was really healing. And today we're actually starting our online music therapy digital fundraiser. So if you want to help a child suffering from loss and grief today, you can go to our website, www.ddjf.org, and a donation of any amount will make an enormous impact on a child's life and empower them to grieve, heal, and grow. And in supporting our Music Heals music therapy programs, we'll be able to continue bringing our programs to more kids in need. Our Music Heals music therapy programs are offered at no charge and is 100% funded by your contributions.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And it's that time where I have to make my special disclaimer that we are not licensed therapists or doctors. I went to school for business, not for medicine. So if you
it's
need
not
help,
Dr. TJ?
No, you can call me Dr. TJ. There's a nice ring to it, but technically it's not. But if you need, if you feel you need help, or if someone you know is in serious grief or loss, please find a licensed therapist or a licensed doctor for that help. Okay, so I think one aspect that we mentioned earlier that is needed to be mentioned again is our social media, because like we said, this doesn't work without you and your involvement. We are building a community of support on our social media, and we liked to post quotes that have inspired us or helped us in some type of way, and we want to share a recent one that really touched home for us. Mr. Taj Jackson, do you want to share it?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Taj Jackson.
It was on our Instagram, which is at, and this is spelled out, D-E-E-D-E-E Jackson Foundation. And we share this quote. Grief is like an earthquake. The first one hits you and the world falls apart. Even after you put the world together again, there are aftershocks. And you never really know when those will come, and the author is unknown. Hmm. Yeah. A lot of quotes from the author unknown.
Yeah, unknown has the most quotes in the world. But that's a very strong,
it's very
strong and accurate and impactful and powerful.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the best, not the best, but that's a very strong comparison. It's like an earthquake. The main earthquake is the biggest jolt, but you never know when there will be that aftershock. You never know when there's going to be that.
I had many aftershocks in restaurants and coffee shops, out on the sidewalk, places where I was trying to control my emotions and didn't want to have that aftershock, but it just comes.
And it can come at any time.
Anytime, anywhere.
You can't prepare for an aftershock, just like you can't prepare for a real geographic aftershock, you know, And that's, I think, something that if you're going through that loss, you gotta understand that those aftershocks never go away. And I do think, Taj and Henry, you can correct me, but I do think, like a real earthquake, the aftershocks slowly get less, more distant. I remember that first year, it seemed like there's aftershock every other hour. But now it's like, you know, there's certain time. It seems less frequent as time goes on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would. But I also, for me, you know, I put my emotions aside for those first couple of years. So for me, it's kind of, you know, if we're using still the earthquake analogy, I'm still waiting for the big one to hit. You know, because I really put my emotions into a compartment. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I'm scared of the actual earthquake hitting for me, and that's the scary thing for me. But so far, you know, knock on wood, I'm just continuing on, but that's, I just don't want it to come crashing down. So I might be a different, I guess, statistic or different.
Do you still feel like an earthquake is going to hit you?
I don't, everyone keeps saying that, you know, I know it wasn't healthy to do what I did, you know, in terms of not, you know, not that, just not grieving like I should have.
You just forget? Did you just try to block it aside?
I just remember, you know, mom's words of like, you're the man of the house, you're the man of the house, take care of your brothers, like kept ringing in my head. And I just, you know, it's, and I've heard stories about other people that have had to do that, and they haven't always been the eldest, you know.
So did you just really numb yourself?
I was very numb to it, you know, because, but at the same time, you know, there's always stuff that affects you. You see something on TV or you read something. So I wasn't completely numb.
Right.
It's just I couldn't break down, you know. I couldn't afford myself to break down like other people around me were, because I felt like if I broke down, then I don't know, you know. I was, and possibly for me as well, I was worried what I would feel like.
I think for me, what really ended up helping besides therapy was getting into mindful meditation, where I learned how to move through the really difficult emotions through meditation. So anytime I felt the sadness coming on, or the anxiety, or just the hurt, I started taking a minute to meditate and to kind of breathe through it and just focus on my breath. And I started realizing that was actually helping me to find a kind of healthier place through my own emotions and be more grounded.
How did you learn about mindful meditation? And is that the purpose of it for grief and loss? Or
it really is to help kind of balance you and you focusing on your breath, and it relieves those. I mean, it can relieve stress, it can relieve anxiety, anything that kind of is that heavy negative emotions that weighs you down and keeps you from really living a fuller life. I've read about mindful meditation, I believe, in a magazine, and then I started taking just classes because I wanted to learn more, and I wanted to learn the technique, and classes ended up really helping me because I could hear other people's stories. And once I started hearing other people's stories of, you know, loss or grief or stress or anxiety, I found like, okay, there's hope. I'm not alone in this struggle with these heavy emotions. Because I think like part of our society is we always want to be happy, happy, happy. Nothing's wrong. Nothing's wrong. I'm amazing. Life is great.
Yeah.
But yet you're struggling within with these feelings because we're not taught in school how to actually move through these emotions. We're taught algebra. We're taught like history. But mm-hmm. we're not taught, oh, I feel really sad. What do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
And so mindful meditation classes ended up helping me kind of learn how to navigate and gain tools that I didn't necessarily get in school.
Okay. There is a comment from Instagram that we circled. Do you want to read it?
Yes, I do. So this comment is from Sweet Mama to You. It is not easy reading these. You're right.
See, I told you.
you are correct. She says, because it's Mama. So true. And the aftershocks can be strong, too. Everyone needs their own time. And this month, on the 14th, it's 6 months since my dad left us. Wow. We are really sorry for your loss, Sweet Mama to You.
It's tough. It's tough because it's tough doing the show because we're in this mentality for an hour every Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important. It's necessary, you know. And if we can help one person, it's worth it, you know.
It really is.
My opinion. If you have a quote that you like, please share it with us on Twitter, DDJ, the letters, DDJ, at DDJ Foundation, or on our Instagram, which is actually DD Jackson Foundation. Everything is spelled out. So that's at DEEDEEJACKSON Foundation. I'm not spelling that one. We would love to hear from you, and we'd repost anything that we feel is strong to the community so that we can help each and everyone who needs the help. Taj, anything you want to add?
No, there's been some really nice, I don't know if I should read some of these, but there's been, I think a lot of people are saying that the show's helped them tremendously and been very helpful. So sweet. We're very happy for that. I think, you know, TJ mentioned in before on, you know, the first episode, you know, we did look, when our mom passed, we looked for ways to cope, and there wasn't really that knowledge out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so another, you know, there's been some other people that have tweeted asking, you know, is this program only for children? And it's, you know, this is for everyone.
Absolutely.
You know, because everyone experiences loss and grief. And, you know, we want to build up a community of, you know, a community of hope and a community of people, you know, helping each other through this. So keep those comments coming. Keep, you know, keep it positive, and we can get through this together.
And keep sharing, too. We really want to hear from all of you about your story, what you're going through. And like Taj said, you know, about being positive, we realize that coming through grief and loss, yes, it can feel heavy, and it you know, and it can feel like you're being weighed down. But the reality is, once you move through it, you can find hope and inspiration. And I feel like all of us, like in this room, like we really are proof of it, that we do feel really inspired about bringing this message and creating this community and bringing music therapy to more and more kids, and, you know, and hearing your stories, because it's that important that we just really start talking about it and start healing.
Here's a comment from our Twitter that I would like to share. It's from Ressa Holloway. I hope it's not Risa Holloway, but if it is, it's from Risa Holloway. She says, "Dad at ER, blood clot. Spoke on phone. He said he was fine. Got there and he was gone. The guilt is unbearable."
Yeah. She also lost her mom. She says that my mother had an abscessed tooth that was pulled. 10 days later, she passed. Watching the suffering was horrible. So she experienced both her mom and her
within
mom.
10 days.
I don't know if that was it. No, her mom died 10 days
after the surgery.
Yeah, so.
Well, Risa, first of all, we love you and we are here with you, and stay strong. And the guilt is simply in my opinion, simply because I feel you love them so much and felt that you should be able to save them. And that's something that I've hope is getting better, because you can't live with guilt. It has nothing to do with you. So you cannot live with guilt.
I think Please. You can turn that guilt too, because I felt guilty after Jeremy died that I didn't live more in the moment with him. And I realized that with the guilt and the regret, that I could actually take that and put it into action. And I feel like that's what I'm doing now in my present. And I feel like Jeremy is, you know, in our last conversation where he was telling me, you know, kind of what he wanted for me in my life. One of the things he said to me was, you know, "Han, I really want you to be more open with people and share. I want more people to know you." And I feel like I'm now taking that and put it into action. And if anything, that's like the biggest gift. But I did have to work through that guilt and that regret to come to the other end, to find some sort of action that would help me heal.
Yeah, I didn't have guilt, luckily, but I was more focused on making my mom proud. And, you know, then later on, when my uncle passed, making him proud. So for me, it was all about what did they want from me, and, you know, what did they expect from me. And I was kind of laser focused on that. And that's how I live my life, is, you know, making the people that I care about proud.
Yeah. I think that's an important... Taj, what are you looking at?
Huh?
What are you looking at?
Oh, no, nothing. I was going to ask you a question.
Ask me a question.
People want to know, like, there's a question on Twitter. Is our focus only death? Like, from loss and grief, when we talk about loss and grief, is it only death?
My answer... Henry, you chime in, and Taj.
Henry will chime in.
Yeah, no,
chopping at the bit. Yeah, so that's why I look straight at TJ first.
It's
I know.
It's not just death. You know, there's many ways. It could be loss of a pet. It could be loss of a home. It could be just.
Well, right now in Louisiana, as I chime in, Louisiana, the floods in Louisiana. A lot of people in Baton Rouge have lost their homes.
Yeah.
And they're now, like, they've lost everything.
I think...
Like, you go through a grieving process with that.
And we have a map, like an idea of how we want this show to be. I just think we all think it's important for it to be authentic. And for us, the motive and what... For us to do this and the experience that we went through, the biggest loss we've had was our parents... Our mom, and in Henry's case, her best friend Jeremy. So that's why these first couple of episodes will be focusing on loss of death. But long term, I think we will be focusing on all different types of loss, because I think the show's more about overcoming grief and that feeling of hopelessness.
Very well said. As I chime in,
thank you. Well, you know what? I should really be thanking you for, Henry, is for sharing your story, because I know for a fact you've helped many people out there.
Yes.
Who can experience and relate to your story. So thank you for sharing your story. I know it's not easy. Hard. But you impacted in a positive way a lot of people. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I think we have to close the show.
Yes.
But please, listeners, spread the word. And we will be back here next Wednesday for 1 to 2 Pacific Standard Time. And if you have any questions that you want answered, please send them to us via social media. Remember, we're not licensed therapists. We're just 4 people who've experienced death and loss and are trying to help others overcome it. Todd, real quick, some social media handles.
Oh, geez. Twitter, it's at DDJ Foundation. Facebook, it's DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. Instagram, it's at DEEDEE Jackson Foundation. website, www.ddjf.org.
That's it.
And email us at info@ddjf.org.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.